Dad had a pretty interesting sort of life in the army, because one of the things that he actually put his hand up for was to go into the jungle warfare training school, and which also hosted the jungle diseases unit as well. So basically, whichever way you look at it, both of those sort of titles were sort of a lot to do with jungle. His unit actually were human guinea pigs. They underwent a lot of laboratory tests in relation to sort of jungle diseases and inoculations, and then they sent his unit into the jungles of New Guinea and also Borneo, where they seen a lot of heavy fighting, and Tobruk and places like that. Yeah, so after the war had finished, Dad didn't come home. He went straight to Japan as part of the occupied forces, and he'd always sort of was very distant about being part of, I suppose most people seen it as peacekeepers, but their official titles were occupiers or the occupied forces, and strange occupying strange people's land, and being the occupier there when his own land for generations had been occupied by settlers and stuff like that. So, yeah, it would have been sort of difficult for him sort of thinking about that. But for his particular unit, the I suppose commendations from the people that are high up back in those days, and of course Len, well, he sort of goes in and history as being sort of a man that spent most of his sort of leave, when they did get leave, to work on studying so that he maybe one day be able to get his wings. And so rather than go and party with the boys, he sort of stayed home and studied. And then eventually he sat the test and got his wings. But the funny thing that he used to tell me about that was, yeah, he said, I was pretty good communications officer because I used to be really good on Morse code and stuff like that. And he said one day they sort of said, oh, you know, you want to join the Lancaster crew? And he said, as a communicator? They said, no, maybe as a gunner. And he said, you won't get me sitting in those things. He said, I've hosed too many of them out. And they were the glass domes that used to sit on the bottom of the Lancasters. But eventually he got his wings, and then he sort of found his ideal plane, which was called Black Magic. And only a few years before he died, he was sort of, we had Christmas together, and I sort of had a bit of a yarn to him. And yeah, he just came up with this story about when he was flying in the sort of South Pacific and that sort of stuff. He was actually, it took a mortar shell which lodged between the fuselage and his seat, and it didn't go off. And he said, yeah, he said, well, I had nowhere to go. He said, I just had to stay there with it. And he said, it's probably about the only time though we didn't have to fight with all the other blokes about getting a landing strip. And he said, I had that all to myself. And so he did make some light sort of conversation of his experiences and stuff, and you know what he hoped to achieve when he got back from the war, maybe starting up a taxi service or an aerial service between Queensland and the Northern Territory. But all those skills and everything that he had were to no avail, because basically he was back in a country where, you know, they weren't even allowed to vote. So it wasn't until 1967 that which is some sort of 10 years later that they were able, it's a lot longer than that actually, but yeah, it was a long time until they were actually recognised as citizens in their own country, and also having that, you know, that right to vote, which most people see these days as just a normal step in time. But yeah, so the lads, I think they were very, very disheartened and very disappointed, and yeah, I think they struggled with that for a long time, given that, you know, you fought beside a lot of people in war, and I know Dad's seen a lot of action, a lot of heavy action that was in that sort of Borneo region, and you know, and of course Len doing his 95 sorties or 95 missions, as it's called, you know, sort of flying over a lot of those islands up in that region, you know, sort of Borneo and other sort of islands in that area. But yeah, so they would have sort of seen a lot, and they sort of struggled to come to terms with sort of seeing a lot of action, being so involved in the war effort and everything else, and but coming back home to, yeah, nothing. And basically when they did get back home, I think, you know, a lot of the inequalities and a lot of the racism, I think, was a lot worse than when they actually went to war. So, yeah, it was a bit like, I suppose, the Vietnam vets getting back in the 70s, you know, like nobody really cared, nobody wanted to care. And it wasn't until some years later that people see and recognise the efforts that a lot of people have put in, especially into conflicts where you've had to go and serve your country. So, yeah, and, yeah, that's just in my family, and I know there's other families with, you know, similar stories to tell, and a good friend of mine, he's been an old bloke that was here, and we shared a lot of time and a lot of culture and a lot of time in the bush together. And he was a prisoner of war in Changi, and he got on with life, but he struggled with that a lot, as with a lot of the other men. You know, they just struggled with, you know, the demons of war and what they had to sort of go through, and then be equal while you're on the battlefield, but yet come home where you weren't equal, you were a lesser person. So those sort of things, and especially with the NAIDOC theme this year, is, you know, 100 years of serving, you know, is sort of something that we shouldn't take too lightly and something that we shouldn't really forget, because it's like two battles. It's bad enough sort of going to fight one battle rather than coming home and then fighting another one. So, yeah, whatever they make some light comedy of some of the things they've seen in war times, certainly a lot of that stuff was very dark when they sort of had those moments of depression, if you like, of not being able to sort of get on and do things that other people are doing and supporting your family and things like that. But, yeah, with Len and his other brother, of course, one was the lightweight boxing champion of the Army, and Len happened to be the lightweight champion boxer of the Air Force. So the Waters boys really sort of had it tied up back in those days. And, yeah, it's funny to hear him talking about that because, you know, it's a very deep place, I think, those sort of conversations, unless you can make light of some of the things that actually happened there. But yeah, so, you know, the lads, they did a lot, and certainly we're very proud of them. And it's only been sort of recently that I basically participated in the Anzac parades and stuff. Before that, I sort of felt very, I had to take a lot of personal time to sort of get my head around the space of marching and acknowledging stuff. But yeah, I think things turned around, and you know, it's sort of because Dad had a lot of problems with marching, but I always sort of ensured that our kids, plus the grandkids, always marched in recognition. And so it probably only took me about 50 years to really get with the program. And but now, sort of, rather than sort of being teary-deary from the sidelines, probably teary-deary from the middle of everybody these days, because yeah, Anzac Day is one of those days where I think a lot of people become very emotional. Well, I think it was the case, the opportunities were there, and it's probably about, at that time, I suppose it looked like an easy job as well, where you can sort of go along and actually get paid for it. But I think, in all honesty, it was about sort of patriotism. It was about, you know, fighting for your country alongside other people, and doing it well, and although you were sort of against the odds, try your best and try very hard to sort of fit in with the program, and also make sure that you looked after yourself enough to come back alive, because unfortunately there were many that didn't come back, and it's difficult in that respect. So, but I think it wasn't so much an obligation of somebody telling them what to do. I think it was an obligation of sort of saying, well, you know, there is a grave threat to this country, and we'll go and line up against the rest of them, and we'll show them that we can do it too.
Mm. Mm. What do you think this NAIDOC Week's achieving? It seems to be very powerful, to be honest, and it's quite sombre though.
Yeah, it is quite somber, and it's going to be a solemn moment, I think, at the Anzac Gates on Saturday morning. But this is all about all our old men and women sort of being recognised, in particular the old men, because I've seen a lot of them. I grew up with a lot of them being around, and you always knew that, you know, they were in the war and that they did this and they did that. And but this year, in particular, in Tamworth, really needs to sort of take a bow, I think, because this year has been sort of a remarkable year for Indigenous Australians, because we did have the Reconciliation Week out in the main street in the CBD this year, and flag raising and a smoking ceremony there, and for council to recognise you know, Aboriginal people in such a gesture, I thought was unbelievable. And in this time, we're sort of, you know, we've still got council sort of supporting us, but the RSL and the Hunter River Lancers are actually come out to put their weight behind this very important occasion, because to us it's giving back our old people the recognition that they deserve. Although they might have been dead for a long time, you know, still through us, you know, their spirit is still alive. So I will do this, and it'll be quite somber, and you know, sort of, it's one of those sort of things that I think there'll be a lot of emotional people around on Saturday. And Terry Stacey, one of the old blokes that actually went to and served in Vietnam, and I hope he can still get across, because he's one bloke that still dons the uniform and wears it quite proudly, and he feels it quite well these days. But then again, he is getting on a bit, but he's very proud to wear the uniform. And
Where's he from?
He's from Toomala, where I come from, and always knew him as a kid. You know, he's sort of, to us, he was a war hero. We didn't even know what he did or anything else, but to us, you know, like little kids growing up, we'd look at this bloke and say, hey, he's been over there to the war, and we didn't know. We knew very little about it. All we knew was, you know, there was a war on, that sort of stuff. Because, yeah, when you're growing up on a mission, there's very little information in and out. So I'm looking forward to sort of seeing sort of Uncle Terry again, just to sort of, only seen him a couple of weeks ago. But certainly, yeah, he was a hero to us because, you know, it was probably in our time, whereas most of Dad's crew were all back before our time. And but, yeah, this NAIDOC week is pretty powerful, and it's powerful because of people taking it on board. But people are just warming so much to, you know, Aboriginal culture and finding out that there is a lot to it, and people have just been unreal this year, the interest that we're getting about this land, about our language, and about, you know, our traditional culture and that sort of stuff. It's something that people are really warming to, and it's certainly come a long way, but, you know, it's the push by the whole of the community that's making Tamworth a very special place, and it is a very special place when we look at sort of how much has been left here from the old people for us. Culturally, it's just so significant, this land.